They were putting out the lights now in the dining hall of the Malabar House Hotel as we sat, Jim and I, at our table in the long gallery. A single candle glimmered in its bowl. What demon was it that had come from the seas deep to smash the hopes and destroy forever the peace of the enigmatic young man opposite me? The Court of Inquiry had demanded simple facts, but I wanted, no, needed, to know more. What really happened that dreadful night on board the SS Patna? Beyond the long gallery of that hotel in Bombay, the harbour office stood distinct below the vivid stars, and it seemed to me as though the sombre building itself had glided nearer to see and to hear.
Lord Jim by Joseph Conrad, dramatized in 6 episodes by Keith Darville, with Simon Treves as Jim and David March as Marlowe. Episode 2.
What do you think it was you'd collided with? A waterlogged wreck?
I honestly don't know, Captain Marlowe. But whatever it was, the Patna went over it as easy as a snake crawling over a stick. The hull quivered and seemed to rise a few inches throughout its length. Then the sound stopped and we were ploughing on again just as before.
Then what happened?
Well, as I said in court, the captain ordered me forward to see if there was any damage. He told me not to make any noise for fear of causing a panic. I thought this was reasonable. I took a lamp, opened the forepeak hatch, and lowered the lamp on a lanyard. The forepeak was half full of water already.
Indicating a large hole below the waterline.
That's right.
And there was just the one bulkhead keeping the water out of the hold.
Exactly.
Were you afraid?
No. I felt no sense of danger then. I hurried back to tell the captain. I found Onslow, the second engineer, slumped at the foot of the bridge ladder. He thought his left arm was broken. The skipper stood at the top.
Report! The forepeak shipping water fast. My God! That rotten bulkhead will give way in a minute. The damn thing will go down and rust like a lump of lead.
Shut your mouth!
Them plates are like brown paper. They won't take the pressure.
Listen to me. You, get below and stop the engines. Move!
Right.
Mr. Mate, examine the bulkhead and report back.
Aye, aye, sir.
I took a lamp down into the hold and began tapping the bulkhead.
Yes?
All of a sudden, a flake of rust as big as the palm of my hand fell off the plate. I put my hand against the bulkhead. I felt it bulge. It definitely bulged. I thought, my God, there's no time.
I can easily picture him to myself in the cavernous gloom. The light of the lamp, the breathing of 100 sleepers in his ears. The deep rumble of the engines blowing off steam made the whole night vibrate like a bass string. The ship trembled to it. Jim stood immobile. The bulging, rust-eaten plates that kept back the ocean must give way. He looked at the sleeping bodies.
Somebody was speaking aloud inside my head. No time. 800 people and 7 boats. I saw there was nothing I could do. They were dead. All of them. Suddenly the steam ceased. I started to run.
Yes?
Up on deck there was an awful stillness. I decided to cut the lanyards of the boats so that they would float free when the ship went down. At least a few could be saved.
Who's that? It's me. My God. I thought you was one of them doggies. Give us a hand.
What are you doing?
Getting out.
The Patna had a long bridge, and all the boats were up there. 4 to port, 3 to starboard. The 4 white men, the skipper, the 2 engineers, and George, the donkey man, were on the port side, frantically trying to get one of the boats off the chocks.
It's you, Hick. Lend a hand, quick. The front chop's jammed.
Oh, nasty. Come on. Come on.
Get your shoulders behind and heave, damn you.
It won't budge, I tell you. Get under and quiet him.
Oh, it was a pretty sight. The four of them tugging, pushing, smashing, ready to kill, ready to weep. I walked to the starboard side of the bridge. I was not one of them. I loathed them. I hated them.
Yes.
But what could I do? If I woke the sleeping pilgrims, there would be panic. Nor was there any way of shoring up the bulkhead in 5 minutes or in 50. It would happen, that's all. There was nothing I could do. Nothing to do but to go down with the ship. But still she floated.
You're the strongest skipper. You get on that. You're temporarily sick. Never get ahead of her, though. Oh, Mike. Look. Look there. Mr. Mike, for God's sake, come and help.
Leave me alone.
You bloody coward.
You call me a coward.
Do you want to die, man? Look behind you, won't you? Look!
At last I turned. A silent black squall had already eaten up a third of the sky. You know how they come up suddenly at this time of year? No warning until they hit wind and rain together?
Mm.
Until that moment, I'd been paralyzed by the scenes of horror that filled my imagination. Now I went to work with my knife, slashing the lanyards of the starboard lifeboats. Overhead, the sky darkened as the squall came closer. Closer.
It's clear. The boat's clear.
Good. All together now. Heave her off. God, it's heavy.
The first swell hit the ship. I felt her move under my feet. Soon she would begin to break up. Then suddenly I saw George, the donkey man, clutch at the air and collapse onto the deck. He didn't fall. Rather, he slipped slowly into a sitting position.
Look at George!
Leave him! Keep pushing! Put your backs into it! Heave!
It's moving! It's going!
Let go! Let go! Let go loose!
Over the side, Greg!
The ship began to buzz fore and aft as the pilgrims began to wake. I realized I was back on the port side of the bridge and I suddenly tripped.
Mm-hmm.
I'd stumbled over George the donkey man's legs. He went over sideways, very gently, stone dead. I remembered hearing him say once that he had a weak heart. I could hear the others shouting, George, jump, jump, George. They were calling to a dead man. 800 living people, and they were yelling after the one dead man to come down and be saved. By now it had come over pitch dark. You could see neither sea nor sky. I heard the boat alongside bumping against the Patna's hull. The ship began a slow plunge. The rain swept over her. The ship was going down. Down, head first, under me. She was sinking and I jumped, and it was as if I'd jumped into an everlasting deep hole.
The contented revelers were making their way to bed. The waiters were putting out the lights in the hotel dining room, but in the long gallery, our solitary candle continued to glimmer in its glass globe. Jim sat opposite me, motionless.
Yes, I jumped all right. I certainly jumped.
Looks like it.
But don't you see, there was nothing I could do. There was no time.
I was hearing the things he could not say to the court. He was a man stunned by the discovery he had made about himself. And he needed an ally, a helper, an accomplice.
There was not the thickness of a sheet of paper between the right and the wrong of it. Well, was there? What would you have done in my position?
I can't say. Nobody can.
Exactly. I believed, as any other man would, that we were doomed. That at any moment the rusty bulkhead would split open and the ship go to the bottom. Now, just for argument's sake, let us suppose I'd stuck to the ship. Stayed on board with those poor, benighted pilgrims. In 30 seconds, as it seemed, a minute at most, I would have been overboard, thrashing about in the squally darkness with 800 other desperate, drowning souls. Don't you think I would have tried to save myself? Do you think I wouldn't have laid hold of an oar, a life buoy, a grating, anything to stay alive?
So instead you cleared out at once?
Jumped. Jumped! I honestly knew nothing about it till I looked up from the lifeboat. I saw the ship rising above us, looming like a cliff. There was no going back.
Nothing could be more true. He had stumbled from a height he could never scale again. He crouched down in the bows, and as the boat rushed forward, driven by the squall, he stole a furtive glance back. He saw just one yellow gleam of the Patna's masthead light high up and blurred, like a last star ready to dissolve.
Then the sea began to hiss, like 20,000 kettles. The boat seemed to fly. For 2 or 3 minutes it seemed as if the end of the world had come. Nobody in the boat made a sound, and in the pitchy black it was impossible to see the skipper or the 2 engineers. We were all blinded and half-drowned by rain. Then at last the squall swept ahead. There was nothing to be heard but the slight wash about the boat's sides. Somebody's teeth were chattering violently.
Oi! What'll get you from jumping, you lunatic? Oi! George! George! Hold on. You're not George. It's that blasted mate. Where's Jules? What have you done with him?
He's back on the bridge. He's dead.
What do you mean, dead?
What I say, dead. Heart attack, I imagine.
I bet you bloody fueled him. Didn't you? You stuck up son of a Stepney whore.
Oh, shut up, you cretin.
You bloody murderer.
Shut up or I'll kill you.
Murderer. Murderer.
Come on, then.
Silence. Silence.
Where?
Where is she?
What?
It's a ship. Where is she? She's gone. Disappeared. Shot down for the Flatiron.
I saw the light go. Yeah. It went out just like a match you throw away.
At that moment, you might have heard a pin drop in that boat. We were like men walled up alive in a roomy grave.
Sounds as if you were likely to have a lively enough time of it, though.
Oh, yes. They hated me. Hated me being there. I was convinced they'd try to tip me overboard. Anything could have happened in that boat, and the world would have been no wiser.
Yes, I know what you mean. There's a kind of madness descends on a small boat adrift in the open sea. Many years ago, when I was a youngster, younger than you, the ship I was serving on went down in the South Atlantic. Mostly, I remember cold.
I know. I've never been so cold in my life. And I didn't dare sleep. I picked up the tiller and hung on to it like grim death, just in case my shipmates tried anything. I was still holding that tiller when the sun finally came up. I must have been holding it for 6 hours or more. I was in the bows, they were in the stern. They sat shoulder to shoulder like 3 dirty owls. They just stared at me. They looked as though they'd been knocking about drunk in gutters for weeks.
Here. I'll let you drop that blooming piece of wood, eh? Here, I'm talking to you. Your tongue dropped out, has it? Well, give us a civil answer, can't you? Don't waste your breath on him. Ignore him. Not bloody likely. Look, use your head. It's all time we're going to be picked up before the day's over. It's a busy shipping lane, ain't it? Or the canal traffic comes this way. And when they pick us up, they're about to start asking questions. Like, where's the bloody packer? And where's the 800 coons what was on her? And out comes there's only four of us in the boat, you know what I mean? So we better get our story straight. And that means all of us, him included.
Mr. Mate, drop that tiller. I'm ordering you.
Yeah. Come on, mate. Be sensible. You're one of us now. We're all in this together, aren't we? Shipmates, like chums, all in the same boat. Yeah, not half. In more ways than one, what?
I don't think he's right in the end.
Yeah, he's all right. Ain't you, Mr. Mate?
Mr. Mate, talk to us.
Yeah.
That is an order.
Ah, don't be like that. We ain't never done you any harm, have we?
I shall say one thing.
That's better, lad.
And it's the only thing I intend saying to you. I want you to be quite clear about it. I am not your shipmate. God forbid I should ever be one of you. And as regards making up a story to fool the authorities, you can say whatever you like. It is nothing to do with me. Do you understand? I don't care. Say what you like.
Oh, so you'll go along with anything we say. Right, Cock?
Let him be. He'll be all right.
Yeah, he's not stupid. What can he do? If he opens his mouth, he will be in it with all of us.
How long was it before you were picked up?
Just before sunset. It was only a matter of time. The Avondale steamed straight at us. The others spent most of the day concocting some kind of story. I kept apart.
But on board the Avondale, why didn't you speak up then? You said nothing.
What could I say? I had jumped, hadn't I? That's what I had to live down. The story didn't matter. It was like cheating the dead.
But there were no dead, were there? The bulkhead held out, after all.
Yes, it held. It's like a joke hatched in hell, isn't it? Yet I swear I felt it bulge under my hand.
It's extraordinary what strains old iron will stand sometimes.
My God, what a chance missed.
If you had stuck with the Patna, you mean?
The Frenchman, the lieutenant from the gunboat that found the Patna, he stayed on board for 30 hours while they towed her to Aden. He kept his honour. He shamed me when he gave evidence today. And I have to face it all again tomorrow. I may have jumped, but I won't run away. What's the time now?
2:30, a little after.
Forgive me, I had no idea it was so late. I dare say you've had enough of my talk. Now, where's my hat?
Ah. What will you do after?
Go to the dogs, as likely as not. You've been awfully decent, you know. Thank you again. Good night, Captain Marlowe.
The candle spluttered out. The thing was over at last. Our communion in the night had been like the last vigil with a condemned man. As the darkness swallowed him up, I heard the crunch of gravel under his boots. He was running, with nowhere to go. And he was not yet 24.
Marlowe! Marlowe, over here!
Ah, oh, Brierley, good day to you.
Are you on your way to the inquiry?
That's right.
Well, jump in. We can travel together.
Oh, thank you, Brierley.
Good of you. Did I see you dining with that young man from the Patna last night?
You did.
Well, each to his own, I suppose. This is a bad business, Marlowe. I feel like a fool sitting there on the bench.
Oh, come now. You're simply doing your duty.
But what's the use of it all? Nothing can save that young chap. He's done for. He must know it. So why eat all that dirt?
Would you rather he followed his skipper's example, ran away?
Since you ask me, yes, I would.
Are you serious?
I wish he'd creep 20 feet underground and stay there. I would.
Would you not think there's a kind of courage in facing it out as he does?
Courage be hanged. The whole affair's a disgrace. Damn it, Marlowe, we're both seamen. You know as well as I that we must preserve professional decency. What I mean is we are trusted. In the merchant service, we are held together by one thing only, a code of decent behaviour. Duty, if you like. A code of conduct we all subscribe to without question. Personally, I don't care a scrap for all the pilgrims that ever came out of Asia. If the pat they'd been carrying a cargo of old rags, it wouldn't have made any difference. A decent man does not behave as that young man did. Such behaviour destroys people's confidence in the service. His shame reflects on you, on me, on all of us. Well, damn it, Marlowe, if he were a gentleman, he'd disappear without trace and spare us all this infernal publicity.
Well, even if he were prepared to, I doubt if he has a penny in his pocket to bless himself with. It takes money to run away, you know.
Very well, that's easily solved. I'll give you 200 rupees right now. Talk to him, it's not too late. Make him see sense. I can't do it myself, you understand.
Forgive me, Brawley. I consider that an outrageous suggestion. That young man has decided to stand up and tell the truth, and I, for one, applaud him.
The evidence laid before us, we are led to one firm conclusion, that the master and mate of the SS Patna evinced an utter disregard of their plain duty, in that they abandoned, in the moment of danger, the lives and property confided to their charge.
The benches were empty that day. For no rows of Europeans in white drill suits, their pith helmets on their knees. Curiosity had been satisfied, and there was no public desire to witness an unspectacular execution. A mere stroke of the pen would suffice to cut Jim adrift.
And therefore your certificate is hereby cancelled with effect from today's date. Next case.
And that, in accordance with the immutable law of the sea, was that. He had lost his certificate. From that day on, Jim was officially an outcast. From the community of the sea, from the community of men of honor. But for me, and to this day do I really know why, the matter could not be allowed to rest there. Jim, I was convinced, was one of us.
Would you like a drink? I can have one sent up.
No, thank you. From now on, I must learn to do without the comforts of first-class hotels. No better than a vagabond now.
That sounds deucedly like self-pity to me.
You're right. I'm sorry. Excuse me.
You won't mind if I just finish off some urgent correspondence, will you?
Of course not. May I have a cigarette?
In the box over by the window there.
Thank you. That's over. Doesn't do to pipe the eye at my age. The monsoon breaks early this year. I carried it off pretty well, I think. Something's paid off. Thank you, though. Your room. Jolly convenient for a chap badly hipped. Bit of shelter. Someday one's bound to come upon some sort of chance to get it all back again.
Perhaps.
Must. One is responsible.
That's true.
Perhaps I'd better go.
It's raining.
Perfect deluge. It's dark out there, too.
Very dark.
Thank you for everything, Captain Marlowe. I ought to go now. Goodbye.
Wait. I want you to...
Well, I can't dine with you again tonight.
I'm not asking you to. Don't be so absurd. Come here. Sit down.
Sit down.
That's better. Jim, I'm going to trust you. This letter is to a friend of mine in Goa. He owns a rice mill. I've never asked him for a favor before. I make myself responsible for him. I want you to take him to him. His name is Denver.
Joe, you are a brick.
I want to help.
You have helped me. Gosh, I can't sit still. You've given me back my confidence.
I've seen men who have gone under. You'll find them in every seaport from Cork to Yokohama. It's an ugly life.
Lord, what an ass I've been. You'll see, though. I'll show you. I've always thought that if a fellow could begin with a clean slate, and now you... Yes. A clean slate. What can I say?
Say nothing. For God's sake, take the letter.
Yes. Of course. It stopped raining.
A clean slate. Did he say?
In episode 2 of Lord Jim by Joseph Conrad, the cast was Jim, Simon Treves, Marlowe, David March, Patna Skipper, Bernard Brown, Onslow, John Hollis, Brierly, Clifford Norgate, Chief Engineer, Brian Smith, and Donkey Man, Christopher Douglas. Lord Jim is dramatized in 6 episodes by Keith Dardo. The director was Graham Gould.